Chocholosa, stimmelasa.
Chocholosa, stimmelasa. Chocholosa, stimmelasa.
Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, and another episode of Writing Life, Insights, Events, and Adventures of Writing. And I am your host, Art Hartnett. For the past 15 years, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation has held the Canada Reads competition. Certainly, this is a competition with the highest profile and publicity in Canada. The winner this year was Lawrence Hill for his latest book, The Illegal. This is the second time for Lawrence Hill to win the prize. He was also the winner in 2009. Many listeners will know him for his enormously successful work, The Book of Negroes, that won, among many other honors, the Commonwealth Prize for Best Book, along with a private audience with Queen Elizabeth, and was made into a 6-episode television series. He wrote a number of books, of course, which you can find online, and he honed his craft as a journalist. My colleague Radhika and I met Lawrence Hill after the launch of The Illegal.
As for what triggered the writing, certainly working as a volunteer in various West African nations in 79 and in the 80s influenced me and sort of helped center the focus of my writing. But I was launched actually long before that. Growing up in a suburb of Toronto, I was writing in my teenage years, long before I had started traveling and working as a volunteer in West African nations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You started writing like about 14, age 14?
Well, I started writing when I was about 6, actually, with real purpose. But by the time I was 14, I was writing short stories and ripping them up and revising them the way writers do. So yeah, I was writing at 6 with some real purpose, but then they turned into short stories at 14.
You're still involved in activism?
Well, sure. I mean, I'm sure like most Canadians, I have all sorts of volunteer activities, some of which are recent and others of which I've been involved with for decades. I began traveling to West Africa with a nonprofit group called Crossroads International, nonprofit, non-religious, non-government group in the 1970s. And I've now traveled 4 times actually with Crossroads to various African nations. They have a number of projects dealing with kind of grassroots socioeconomic development for girls and women. But I've also spent 35 years helping them raise funds in Canada so they can do this work in Africa. So my primary role now is as a kind of an honorary patron where I speak on their behalf in Canada. But I visit prisons once or twice a year as a volunteer and speak with book clubs. It's a group called Book Clubs for Inmates, so I'm quite active in cultivating literacy and dialogue in prisons and recognizing the humanity of inmates and stepping in to discuss literature with them so they can sort of forget themselves for a few hours and think about something else and be stimulated and engaged. That's very rewarding. I have a few other volunteer activities too. But, you know, one of the things about Canada that is lovely is that there are many, many people who have volunteer engagements in addition to whatever work they may have.
Also, I when I read extracts from The Illegal, what I sensed was also a great deal of activism couched in writerly language. So how do you balance that? I mean, you have an obligation to your fiction, but you also have some ideas about how the world should be or where it's going.
How do I balance a natural sense of activism as a citizen with my purposes as a novelist? Well, I hope the activism isn't too evident in the actual line-by-line writing, because the first interest, of course, is to deliver a compelling and believable drama, which is supposed to sort of determine everything else. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to be too much at the pulpit, so to speak, when you're writing fiction. I don't think readers like to be preached at or like to be told what to think or what to believe. And so certainly I have a strong moral code, whether it's to do with geopolitics or, in this case, issues pertaining to refugees moving around the world, trying to save their lives and reestablish themselves in other places. I have lots of thoughts and beliefs, and I speak about them publicly. And I'm an active Canadian in terms of my volunteer work as well. But when it comes time to write fiction, I try to let the story determine everything else. Mm-hmm. And the drama has to be preeminent. And I think you have to respect the reader and to assume that the reader is smarter than the writer. And so if you make that assumption, it helps you not beat the reader over the head with a stick.
You describe yourself on your webpage as a compulsive storyteller in the oral African-American tradition. So what happens when you take an oral tradition and put that into writing?
What happens when you take an oral tradition and put it into writing? I think what is supposed to happen if things are working well is immediacy and a sense of instant drama. I started reading African-American poetry and essays and fiction intensely when I was about 14 or 15. And one of the things that characterized all this work that I began to ingest as an early teenager was immediacy and directness. So when you step into Native Son by Richard Wright, it's like you're being grabbed by the collar and pulled into a story. Or same thing with the poetry of Langston Hughes or the work of Zora Neale Hurston, or the poetry of Gwendolyn Brooke is similarly frontal. And so I suppose I too wanted to write with a sense of immediacy and purpose. Mm-hmm. So I guess the orality of African-American culture translates into immediacy on the page.
You know, your heroes are oppressed, persecuted, and displaced. Where do you find the place to enter their story organically? What is the point? How do you determine that?
Well, my protagonists tend to be people who are marginalized and scrambling to survive. Well, really all four of my novels have protagonists who are in trouble in some respect or another and trying to gain their footing. I think the essence of drama is to put a character under pressure and to watch them squirm. That's why a reader steps into a page. If everybody's happy and has a lovely hot breakfast and goes out for a gorgeous walk on a sunny day and has nice tea at lunch and goes to bed happy, well, there's not much story there, is there? There's not much drama. Drama really consists of characters reacting to pressure, which mounts as the story continues, and the mounting pressure generally forces some sort of evolution on the part of the protagonist. And so I have to think to myself, who's the best person to tell the story I want to tell? Who's in the best position? Who offers the richest perspective? And so how do I come to these characters, and how do I step into them, and how do I make their flights through life interesting? And I think that really that comes down to heart and to imagination and to empathy. And when I'm often asked about what constitutes effective writing, I tend to get away from tools, because anybody with half a brain and a decent education can develop writing tools, can learn how to research it, to lie a clear sentence down on the page. What really is difficult and taxing, what really is the province of the novelist, is heart and imagination and empathy. What's difficult is to believe and to dig deep and to come up with characters who seem real and whose struggles are such that a reader can identify with. So I don't quite know how to answer the question, except you have to care deeply about the people you're writing about and not to despise them, even though some of them might do despicable things, to treat your characters with humanity and respect and to allow them to surface.
You must have answered a million questions about the Book of Negroes. Do you sometimes feel you want to change direction and to write something totally different, science fiction or whatever?
Yes, and I have. The Illegal is a radically different book from the Book of Negroes. I wrote a couple nonfiction books after the Book of Negroes, but this is my first novel since the Book of Negroes, and it takes a radically different direction. It does share in a preoccupation with human suffering and alienation discrimination and exploitation and injustice. Mm-hmm. Those are themes that run through all of my works, and I'm sure always will. But other than the fact that I concern myself with human injustice, which is a very general comment, you can go a million ways with that, the illegal is different in just about every respect from the Book of Negroes. So yes, absolutely, I need to keep moving it as an artist and working in different ways. The illegal is told from many different points of view. It's a novel set in 2018. It has an element of a dystopia in it. It's set in two fictional nations, which I've invented in the Indian Ocean. And so it's about as different as the writing can be from the writing of the Book of Negroes. And the style of the book is radically different as well. It has kind of a narrative verve. It's told from many different points of view. It incorporates great flashes of humor and satire. It's an overtly political novel. So it's about as different as you can get from the Book of Negroes. It has a loud sort of in-your-face narrative approach. So it moves it on a whole different wavelength narratively than the Book of Negroes. So yes, absolutely. I was sort of aching to bust free, and I did so with The Illegal.
I had another question about humor. In some passages in your new book, there's lots of gallows humor, and I really enjoyed that. But how do you as a writer make sure that that's sensitive to the character and to the reader?
That's a great question. How do I balance humor, and in what way do I sort of work to make sure that humor respects the reader and the characters? Well, first of all, I think in Canada, and maybe in other countries too, certainly in Canada, we have this ridiculous notion that if a novel has humor, or many flashes of humor, or is downright comical in its thrust, it's less serious and has less gravitas than a novel that's ponderous and heavy without any smiles and laughter. And of course, I don't think anything could be further from the truth. It's extremely hard to write comedy or humor, whether you're inserting little bits of it, as I do, or whether your primary intention is to be a comic writer, which is not my primary intention in The Illegal or in my other novels. And humor is a dangerous thing. I mean, I write about very painful issues. I write about genocide and slavery and alienation and racism and the squelching of identity, the theft of human beings. These are issues that surface, profoundly in say, the Book of Negroes or in The Illegal. But this most recent novel, The Illegal, I've chosen to write with a more narrative verve and playfulness, and to incorporate flashes of humor and even satire into the writing. Well, that's a dangerous thing, but I admire that approach that other writers take, and I try to do the same. It's a very delicate thing to walk a line of humor in and among things that can be very sad and painful. There are lives that are lost and people who are badly oppressed in this story, but still, I think it's worth trying to come to it with humor. Life is sometimes funny. There's no reason why it can't show up funny on the page too. And I can't really worry too much about offending readers' sensibilities when I write. Of course, I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But if I'm worried about a reader's response when I'm writing, it's just going to tie me up and make me feel paralyzed and self-conscious. And my job as a novelist is to break free of self-constraint, not to be sort of hemstied by it. And so I like to break out and kind of bust free and run free when I write, and not worry too much about how other people might respond, but try to write in a way that feels true and authentic to my own values. Now, I was raised by American immigrants to Canada who spent their lives at the forefront of the civil rights movement. Sometimes they'd lose their fights, sometimes they'd win their fights, but every day they'd come home and talk to us at the kitchen table with great flashes of humor about the ways that they'd screwed up and the ways that they'd succeeded, the problems they'd had, the barriers they'd hit, the outright failures they'd encountered, but still they managed to do so with flashes of humor. And that influenced me profoundly. Black American humor, Black American literature, Jewish literature, Russian literature, all these literatures are shot through with humor. And so I stand in the tradition of writers who embrace serious subjects, but also sometimes embrace comedy as a means of holding a reader's humanity. And there's no reason why you can't get a good laugh from time to time, even when you're thinking about some of the most painful subjects in the world.
Mm-hmm. And the character in this book is a runner, and you also a runner.
Yes, the protagonist in the novel is an elite marathoner who's 24 years old, named Keita Ali. And he aspires to be a champion runner and to be revered in his country, to be rich and famous. He lives in the third poorest nation in the world, a small mountainous island that's erupting in genocide. And he wants to be famous. And the only way that a child can legitimately aspire to be rich and famous in this very poor nation is to become a champion runner. Because although it's a very poor country, the one thing that it claims, its one claim to distinction in the world, is that it produces the fastest marathoners in the world. It's a running culture. Kids grow up running at altitude. They end up with great lungs. And it's a country that venerates runners. And so he aspires to be one too. But things don't quite work out the way he was hoping as his country erupts in genocide and he has to flee for his life. So, yes, I've run many marathons and half marathons and 10Ks, and I too aspired to run and race and win in the Olympics. It was a dream that I never realized, but I certainly chased it for many years. So yes, I was able to draw on my knowledge and love of running to make my lead character an elite marathoner. By the way, I was never an elite marathoner. I was finishing at the back of the pack.
Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. You're listening to Conversation with Lawrence Hill on Writing Life Radio.
Criticized in a very outmoded way a few years ago when somebody told you they would be burning your books. Did you ever figure out what that really meant to them?
Yes, I investigated fully and wrote a book about the book burning. In about 2010, 2011, when my seventh novel, The Book of Negroes, came out in the Netherlands, the title was translated directly from the English-Canadian title, The Book of Negroes. And although the book was a bestseller in the Netherlands and I was very welcomed by the black community, you know, the Surinamese community in Amsterdam, very welcomed. And when I came home after a book tour, one Surinamese Dutch gentleman who lived in Amsterdam wrote to me with the line beginning, "Dear sir, I intend to burn your book." And he was so scandalized by the use of the word Negro in the title of the book that he declared that he was going to burn it in a very prominent park in the Netherlands that celebrates the abolition of Dutch slavery. And I wrote back to him and I said, "You must understand that the title of the Book of Negroes derives from a British military document kept to record the exodus of African Americans from New York City to Nova Scotia, Canada in 1783. And I'm using this title to resurrect the name of a forgotten historical document dealing with black history in Africa, the States, Canada, and the UK. All places are drawn into this document kept by the British Navy in 1783. But he didn't want to read the book and declared that he wouldn't open a page of the book and look at it unless I changed the title. And then he proceeded to burn copies of the cover of the book, you know, in this park while television cameras rolled.
Did they actually go ahead with that book?
Yeah, and my publisher's life was threatened, and it was a very ugly incident. I chose to take the moment to explore the politics underneath the surface of this and to write a short book about this incident. And my essay is called, "Dear Sir, I Intend to Burn Your Book, : An Anatomy of a Book Burning." And it was published a few years ago by the University of Alberta Press.
You did say, like, you spent several years writing this particular book. Are you planning it very carefully? Do you do long outlines and then assemble things slowly?
Well, it's pretty hard to write a long novel without some sort of plotting and thinking about the structure of the novel, where you're starting and where you're going. So I like to know where I'm starting, and I like to know where I'm heading. I like to imagine myself on top of a mountain, and then there's a huge mist-shrouded valley, and on the other side of that valley, covered in mist, there's another mountaintop, which I can see because I'm standing above the clouds, and I'm going to have to walk to that other mountaintop. That's going to be the novel. And somehow that walk is going to involve a long, tortuous path down in the valley, and I can't see in there, and I don't know how I'm going to make it, but I'm heading toward that other mountain peak. That's my journey, and the writing will help me discover the path or the paths that I must take. So I like to have a sense of where I'm starting and where I'm going to go. I like to have a basic sense of what I think I'm about and what the story is supposed to accomplish, but I leave tons of room to be free to sort of write my way into the story and find it through writing. I don't like to plot everything in such a detailed way that it kills the life and kills the joy of writing and kills the spontaneity of creative exploration. For me, writing is exploration. Writing is a discovery. I don't really know what I'm doing, and I write to find out. So I want to leave room to have those discoveries along the way.
You know, a lot of our listeners are emerging writers or hoping to establish themselves. Do you have anything to say about how you got published in the first place? Like, what that process was like? I know it's a long time ago for you now, but and things have changed considerably in publishing itself. But as a writer, there's so many routes. What was your route?
Well, my route in getting published was pretty common at the time. I mean, my first book came out in 1992. It was a novel called Some Great Thing. It was published by a small literary publisher in Winnipeg called Turnstone Press. Very respected. Been around a long time even then. They published about 8 books a year. But they were really good, but they were tiny and they had no budget. But before I published that novel, I did what most Canadian writers have done, certainly of my generation or older, and that is that I was publishing in literary magazines. So literary quarterlies that maybe pay you $50 or $100 or nothing, or $200 to publish your short story. This is where I first began, and many, many Canadian writers who are now quite famous began by publishing poetry or short stories in literary quarterlies. And so that's exactly what I did. Once I had a bunch of stories published in literary quarterlies that have very small readerships, some of them might only be having subscription lists of 1 or 2 or 500 people, or maybe 1,000 if you're lucky. But publishers pay attention to them, and so do literary agents, and so do astute readers and booksellers, because they know that that's where the next generation of writers is coming from. So a smart agent or a publisher, editor, bookseller will be keeping their eye on new writers who are getting published in literary magazines, because those are going to be the prominent writers of the next generation. And so once I had a bunch of stories published, I started approaching publishers, and I tried to publish a collection of short stories. Nobody was interested. So I decided that, which is a good thing because they weren't very good stories. And then I went back and decided to write a novel. So it took me a few years to do that. And I thought the hardest thing in my life would be to write that novel. It turns out the hardest thing in my life would be to publish it. And like so many writers, I tried and tried and tried and was rejected over and over and over again with that first novel. I could have wallpapered my bathroom with rejection slips. I got so many of them. And I think that the thing I tell developing writers is to have faith and to keep going and to dig deep and to believe that they have something beautiful to say and to find that and to bring it out and put it down on the page and to keep writing and not to give up hope when they get slapped in the face or told no or rejected. We all get, most of us get rejected numerous times. Very few writers have a smooth, easy path when they're never criticized or never slapped down or never told no. We all get criticized, and I think the single most determining factor in terms of achieving success as a writer is not talent or intelligence, it's perseverance and faith. Faith in yourself and faith that you have something worth saying and faith that it's okay to spend 2, 3, 4, 5 years mucking around in your own imagination with no promise of a publishing deal or of a readership or of a dollar sign. So it takes a lot of faith and it takes a lot of perseverance. And I truly believe that those are the two most significant factors in determining whether or not you'll make it as a writer.
Well, this is welcome and wonderful advice. A big thank you to Lawrence Hill for answering our questions patiently in the middle of a busy day. From your hosts, Art Hartmut and Radhika Yedanapudi, Julia Vergara, and the crew of Writing Life Radio on CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio, thank you for listening. To get in touch with us, email us at riotousrhymes@gmail.com. A selection of past episodes is on our blog at riotousrhymes.blogspot.ca and also at cooperadio.org. Please tune in again next week, and as Lawrence Hill just advised us, have faith in your writing, put it down on the page, and keep on writing.